Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. This is the Josh Meister, and we just got finished watching Season 5, Episode 9, which was called Namaste. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people in the chat tonight because I made a big mistake, and I forgot to schedule the episode in advance. And I think a lot of my live listeners usually tend to join the show before I get there, because I usually arrive maybe about 5 or 6 minutes or so after the show ends, because I'm frantically trying to take notes on everything that I remember from the preview for next week's episode. And so I didn't show up and start the chat until 6 minutes late, and normally people are there, up to 15 minutes early. Anyway, so, but we do have a few people in the chat tonight. We've got The Missing Toe, Leland, Bailey Bear, and we've got a guest at the moment. So not too bad. So hopefully you guys will be able to help me out with some insights. I did not see the recap episode. I heard that they did a rerun of the episode from 2 weeks ago last week, and I did not get to see that episode, so I don't know whether they had pop-ups in it, but if they did, unfortunately, because I didn't see it, I don't know what the pop-up said, and so I'm not going to even talk about the last episode at this point like I usually do. So I'll just go ahead and jump right into this week's episode. So we start out in the present, which is 2007 on Lost, and we get to see how a JIRA Flight 316 crashed. Frank landed on the runway, but they were going too fast. They crashed into trees, and the co-pilot was impaled by a tree branch, which was unfortunate. But it was kind of interesting because We went through this whole thing, a few episodes ago, where we were looking at proxies and things like that, and how, of course, the pilot of Flight 815, he was killed by the monster pretty much like right away. It sort of makes you wonder if Frank is going to die, because that's what happened to the Flight 815 pilot. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with that, I guess, in the coming episodes. It makes me a little bit nervous where Frank is right now, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So we saw how the plane crashed. We find out shortly thereafter that Sun was indeed in the present with Frank, not back in time with Jack and some of the rest. And this, I thought, was kind of interesting, at the beginning of the episode anyway. We sort of get, I guess, maybe a little bit of explanation for it later, but Ben was not among the injured people. And when Caesar was, showed the injured people to Locke, he, of course, Ben was among those people. And it was very, I don't know. Like it was very strongly implied by Caesar that Ben had gotten injured in a crash, and that doesn't seem to have been the case. Of course, we know that he was beat up before he got on the plane, and so he did have some injuries from that. But and of course, we find out in a little bit later in the episode that Sun knocks him over the head with a paddle, but I don't know. Why would he be like still be unconscious and thrown in with all of the other people who got injured on the plane? Obviously that was at a later time. Well, I don't know. It seemed like that to me anyway, because in this episode, when they're showing the survivors of the JIRA, Flight 316, it seems as though Frank has just barely come off the plane. So this is the same day of the crash. Whereas a few episodes ago, we saw Locke, and it was, nighttime and everything, so we know at least, this is the next day when he's having that conversation with Caesar about the people who got injured. And so it doesn't make sense that Ben would still be unconscious from getting knocked out with a paddle the next day. So I kind of wonder if maybe somebody else also injured Ben, and I kind of wonder if it was Caesar, since he, you know, again, since he implied that Ben got injured on the plane. So I don't know if there's much to that, but obviously Ben somehow goes from being knocked out where he was, you know, next to the outriggers, to being inside the Hydra station with the other injured people. So hopefully we'll find out a little bit more of that story. They won't leave us hanging there. All right, so then we go to 30 years earlier. So this was 1977, and Jim goes to the flame to find out from Radzinski, who's a familiar name. If you remember, he was the guy, of course, who was with Desmond's hatchmate, Inman. Thank you, Leland. Kelvin Inman. And Kelvin Inman says that his partner before Desmond showed up was Radzinski. And that's the only name that we know him by, I think. I don't think we ever have heard his, you know, like if he has another name other than Radzinski. But in any case, so that was a little bit of a surprise to me to find out that, you know, well, and of course, shortly after that, we also find out that the Dharma Swan Station has not been built yet. And Natalie in Seattle just joined us. Thanks, Natalie. Hi. You know, actually, Bailey Bear right here, we'll pause, because she brings up a really good question. How did Alana see them leave on the boat? It seems they traveled quite a bit to the boat. Yeah, that was really weird. I totally agree with that, because none of that was very clear. Like, in the episode where they introduced, you know, where they showed us resurrected Locke, it looks like where Locke and Alana were on the beach, I'm pretty sure that there were two outrigger canoes, like, behind them on the beach. I could be wrong about that, but I thought that was the case. At the very least, it seemed like she motioned back, you know, indicating that there were some other boats behind them or something. But she mentioned that the pilot and a woman took off on one of the three boats. Well, how did she know any of that? Because nobody knew that there were three boats. Nobody knew anything about boats until Ben, you know, took Sun there. And then it seemed as though Frank and Son took off on the boat right then. Although, on the other hand, they did, you know, obviously, again, Alana knew that the pilot and some woman had taken off on the boat. So that could mean one of two things, I guess. Either Alana was spying on them and saw that happen, or maybe Frank went back to tell them, hey, I'm going to take a boat to the other island. But then, of course, that's going to bring up all kinds of other questions from the other crash survivors. And why can't we go with you? You know, if there's three boats, you know, we want to go exploring too, or whatever. So that wasn't explained very well. I don't know how they're going to kind of explain all that, if they will at all. But sort of confusing how all that happened. So thank you for bringing that up, Bailey Bear. That's a good question. I'm going to put that in my show notes. Okay, so Jim goes to the flame to find out from Radzinski if he's seen anyone else from the plane crash, because Jim and Sawyer have just been talking to Jack and Kate and Hurley, and they say they got here, you know, they were on a plane, and Sun was with them, and so Jim just takes off. And he immediately goes to the flame to talk to Radzinski. So Jin assumes that there must be a plane somewhere on the island. He, of course, doesn't realize what has happened, which is that, you know, a few people sort of flashed back in time while the rest of the people who were on the plane and the plane itself never came back in time to 1977. I can't blame Jin because that doesn't even seem to make sense very much to me. Other than it's an island thing, you know, it wanted certain people to go back, I guess. I don't know how else to explain that. Natalie in Seattle says, the writers like us to fill in the blanks with our crazy theories. And Bailey Bear says that the canoes were sitting out in the open when we saw Locke. Okay. Juliet says that there's, oh, by the way, and Radzinski, of course, does not find any evidence that a plane has crashed, and he fights with Jin about that. But then they find evidence of a hostile, and we'll get back to that in just a moment. So Juliet, the next thing in the episode, Juliet says there's a sub coming in this afternoon, and I sort of got the feeling that she may have been jealous of Kate being back, or maybe she thinks that James, still has feelings for Kate or might try to get back with Kate or something like that. She definitely seemed to have a problem once, Sawyer told her that that Kate, and the others were back. That's when Juliet brings up that there's a sub coming. And so, my first impression watching the episode was Juliet is kind of saying, I can leave if you want me to get out of your way. But later in the episode, we sort of find out that, Juliet was willing to help out. And so it's a little bit ambiguous. I guess we're supposed to think that Juliet was really saying, I can help, I'll go grab the manifest for the sub and add them in. But there was also, at that point, they hadn't really explained that whole idea yet. And so at that point in the episode, it certainly seemed like Juliet was almost saying, I can get out of your way. So that's kind of interesting. Sort of potentially a double meaning in what she was saying there. In the present, Frank says that he's talking to the other survivors of Ajira Flight 316. And he says that he can't make contact with the radio, but not to worry because, of course, once they realize that the plane's not where it should be, they'll come looking. And so I guess Frank hasn't been, either he hasn't been educated in the island is moving all around the world and it's not staying in one place, or he just doesn't want to let that on to any, let anybody else know that because he doesn't want anyone to panic about it. A couple other good points in the chat. The Missing Toe says they played that off too for tension's sake with the Kate not on the list scene. Yeah, that was interesting that Juliet didn't just add Kate to the list like she did with Jack. She had to make Kate sweat a little bit and kind of get nervous. And maybe I wonder if Juliet did that so that there would be some suspicion about Kate. But then again, probably not, because that would draw suspicion right back to Juliet for being the one who brought in the new name. But yeah, that was kind of mean of Juliet to do that, I guess. Unless that guy just hadn't gotten a new copy of Juliet's updated manifest yet, and so she came to the rescue. I don't know. Either way, Natalie in Seattle also made a good comment that Juliet made Kate a mechanic so that she can keep an eye on Kate. Keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. That's a good point. Oh, yes. And she also points out, Natalie also points out, I love that Jack is a workman, hysterical, a bit of humble pie. Yeah, I liked that they said that's what his aptitude test showed that he would be best at being as a workman. So, and I loved how he had the same reaction that Ben's dad did. A workman? What is that? What does that mean? Oh, great, I'm a janitor? You've got to be kidding me. But at least Jack was, a little more willing to go along with it because, he knows this is not going to be a permanent thing. And they're just trying to, get their in with the Dharma Initiative on a temporary basis. But, okay, so where were we? Okay, so Frank was explaining to the crash survivors that, not to worry because somebody will come looking for their crashed plane. Caesar says that he starts out being kind of a jerk. Some people thought that he was kind of like the Jack figure, but Jack was not nearly this much of a jerk. Caesar's definitely a take charge kind of person, but he's really overbearing and kind of not very nice about it. He says they're buildings and cages, and he's already kind of starting a fight about, what to do, rather than, kind of calmly trying to discuss the situation and figure out, what to do along with everyone else. He's already got his mind made up, and he's trying to impose it on everybody else and sort of yells at Frank, which is kind of dumb of him, I guess. So Caesar starts ranting about how there's buildings and cages and they need to investigate, yada, yada. Ben, in the meantime, hears this, and he goes, oh, yeah, we're on the Hydra Island. That's a good idea. I'm going to wander off. And so he walks off. Sun notices, and she follows. And then Frank watches Sun walk off after Ben, so we get back to that story a little bit later. Listening to a comment in the chat, would have looked suspicious to bring in a new recruit and put him on security right away. Oh, I guess we're talking about Jack still, right? Like, they didn't want to stick Jack in security. Yeah, that makes sense. Although, on the other hand, you know, Sawyer sure made it to security pretty quickly. Well, we don't really know what the timeline was there, but he came to be buddies with Horace, and, I mean, his whole story of how they got to the island was just suspect from the beginning. Anyway, okay, Bailey Bear brings up a time paradox question. She says, I have a question. Can the Oceanic Six that are in Dharma now be killed in the 1970s? They are alive in 2004. I'm confused. Okay, actually, in this case, it's not so much of a time paradox. Yes, I would say, anyway, with my understanding of time travel, and of course, you know, this is all theory because, you know, we don't have time travel at the present time. But, you know, in theory, if they went from 2007, if they flashed back to 1977 and were killed, they would be dead. They still would have been born. They still, you know, would have lived up to that point in their life, but when they got to the 2007 point in their timeline and went back in time, that's still their 2007 self, I guess you could say. It's the same person who just went back in time. And so, yeah, they could get killed when they're back in time, certainly. Now, however, this is something that I'll have to bring that up later because, I potential spoiler, but, yeah, so I'm going to hold that thought for later when we're talking about something else without giving anything away. But I'm going to put your note, your comment in my show notes, and we'll get back to that. The missing tail has a good point, too, in the chat. If you go back in time, yes, you can be killed because they're on their own timeline, even though they're time traveling. That's why Fergert was able to get killed. Bailey Bear says, so would they still be alive in 2004? Are you talking about 2007 is actually where the present time is on Lost. Like, that's the latest point that we've seen in time is 2007. So when they go from when they're on the JIRA Flight 316, that's 2007 because they've been home for 3 years. So 2004, when Flight 815 crashed, you know, that hasn't happened yet in 1977, but the point is that they're 2007 people who have now gone back in time. So if they were still stuck on the island, you know, 30 years or, you know, 27 years later when their plane crashes, then they'll be really old, and, yeah, they could potentially see themselves on the island, I guess. But anyway, that's, you know, that all that is probably not going to happen. But, yeah, that's another one of those weird time travel things. But we will talk about a potential paradox that's the other way around in a little while. Hope that makes sense. I know the time travel stuff really sort of frustrates people. And Natalie in Seattle says, I suspend my disbelief 100% when time travel is happening. Yeah, you kind of have to do that. Honestly, I mean, there's so many paradoxes and so many contradictions, really, in Lost, as with any time where they bring time travel into a plot. Pretty much any time that you talk about time travel, going back in time, there's almost always a paradox, you know, where there's no way that certain things could have happened in this fictional story. And, I mean, you can certainly, if you're interested in learning more about time travel, you know, if you want to read a whole book on the subject, I definitely recommend A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. I actually read that mainly because it was referenced a couple of times on Lost. There was an other, don't remember his name right now, he was the one who guarded the Room 23, the building where Room 23 was, where Carl was being held. And Also, it later showed up on Ben's table where Ben used to live. A Brief History of Time is a very good book that does explain in a pretty simple way, about as simple as you can explain time travel. It explains a little bit of time travel theory and what paradoxes are about. You can also look, of course, at the Wikipedia article for it too. I think it's just time travel, something like that. And or you can do a Google search for something like the grandfather paradox or something like that. That'll kind of give you an idea of what I mean when I talk about paradoxes with, you know, for example, somebody can't go back in time, kill their grandfather before the grandfather had any kids, because then they never would have existed and they never would have been able to go back in time. But anyway, moving on. Okay, so 30 years earlier, Juliet, you know, this is back in 1977, in other words, Juliet goes to Amy to get the incoming subs manifest. Amy mentions someone named Pierre, which I assume she meant Pierre Chang. Of course, he did show up later in the episode. And Amy says that her son's name is Ethan. So one of the speculations, I can't remember if that was recorded on the podcast last week or if we just talked about that after the podcast, but that was something that people had speculated, that maybe the baby that Julia delivered was going to be, you know, somebody suggested Goodwin, which would be really weird because, you know, her delivering her future lover. But, well, it turned out to be Ethan. And, you know, we don't know if there was any kind of romantic relationship or any hint of it, you know, between Juliet and Ethan, although Ethan did seem to be very friendly with Juliet, at least they were, you know, good friends, and of course Ethan was one of Juliet's recruiters. You know, either way, it's kind of interesting. Again, I'm making kind of a jump here, just assuming that that is Ethan Rom. I don't know if that really makes sense. I don't think we know Amy's last name, and Horace's last name is Goodspeed, not Rom. Rom could have been a made-up nickname, you know. Maybe this Ethan is not Ethan Rom, so who knows? But that's a theory anyway. The missing toe says, no wonder Ethan turns out to be so creepy, missing daddy issues. All right. Also in the past, Sawyer tells Jack, Kate, and Hurley to dress like recruits and pretend to have been on the sub. And he says that nobody on the sub will know because all the other recruits were unconscious. They all had to take drugs to, you know, get on the sub, just like Juliet did. So this is the point a little bit later in the episode where Rudzinski's computer senses activity in grid 325, and he thinks there's a hostile in their perimeter. And Jim, hoping that it's Sun, runs out with his gun, and he wants to be the first one there, and he finds Saeed. And he asks Saeed, you know, have you seen Sun? And he's happy to see him. And then Rudzinski catches up, and Jin has to pretend to not know Saeed and to treat him like a hostile. And, of course, I'm sure Saeed is going, okay, what the heck is going on right now? Like, you were just talking to me, we're friends, and now you're pointing a gun in my face and treating me like a bad guy. But Saeed was smart enough to kind of, you know, keep his mouth shut and just kind of go along with it. So we find out shortly after that the Swan Station hadn't been built yet. I briefly mentioned that. There's actually an interesting article about this up on Sludgeweb's Lost site. They talk about how, you know, there's the Swan model that Rudzinski is building. And I'll read you some of the comments that that they had about that. I'll paste a link to that in the chat, and, of course, it'll be in the show notes, too. Just a little bit of an excerpt from Sludgeweb's Lost site. Astro Jones posted this article. In tonight's episode, we got to see a model of the Swan Station at the Flame, where future hatchmate Rudzinski was manning the controls. This brings a great deal into question, like why Rudzinski felt the need to create the blast door map in the first place, if he had prior knowledge of all the other stations and seems to have held a fairly high post within the Dharma Initiative. In addition, he seems to have created the Swan model, and it appears similar to the one we saw in the original Swan orientation film. So what do you think about Rudzinski's blast door map now? That's a good question. I don't want to get too much into discussion of that unless anyone's got any good comments about that, but kind of interesting to ponder about anyway. Why would Rudzinski have built the blast door map if he already had knowledge of the island and where the other stations were and things like that? And the missing toe in the chat says, little did Rudzinski know he was building the structure that would be his demise. True. Okay. Next thing I've got in my notes is that Jin tells Sawyer over the walkie that he found Saeed. I'm going to go into cranky fanatic mode for just a moment here and say it surprised me a bit that, you know, Jin walks away from Rudzinski, sort of like walks outside with the walkie to get away from where Rudzinski can hear him, and he tells Sawyer over the walkie, it's Saeed. And, I mean, I'm like, okay. Now, let's think about this. Walkie-talkies, there can be more than one person listening to a conversation. It's not an encrypted connection between one person and the other person. Anybody that's listening to that channel can hear that conversation. So hopefully nobody else is listening in, because then Jin and Sawyer are both going to have to explain themselves on how they know this guy's name and how they're already friends with him and all that kind of thing. Anyway, I had to point that out because that... that sort of stood out to me. I couldn't believe that they would, you know, just kind of break character over the radio where anybody could be listening in. The missing toe says, maybe Rudzinski was trapped in the hatch when the purge happened. He was trying to map everything from memory. That's an interesting point. Map everything from memory to form some type of plan. Natalie in Seattle brings up an interesting point. You know, I'm not sure. We can look that up on Lostpedia, I guess, to see what the timeline was where Rudzinski would have been in the hatch. And, you know, I'm not really sure if Kelvin ever really gave any. Well, no, I guess he did say how long he'd been there. I can't remember how long at the moment, but that could give us, well, that. And we know that, you know, in the past where we are right now, it's 1977. We know the. I think, if I remember right, the copyright date on the Swan Station video is 1980, if I'm not mistaken. So if we're, you know, and it looks like the video was shot in the Swan Station. So if we can trust the date on that video, that would sort of indicate that the Swan Station became in operation in 1980. And if that's the case, and we know that Desmond got rescued in 2004, I don't know if you want to say rescued, but in any case, he left the hatch in 2004, shortly after Flight 815's crash. And I think, if I remember right, he'd been there for 3 years. So I guess Kelvin was there until, what would that have been, like 2002? Because he was there for a while with Desmond, and then Desmond ended up being there on his own. So, in any case, I guess it probably would have been about 20 years that Kelvin was there, and how long was he there with Rudzinski? I don't know. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Kelvin and Rudzinski were the first pair, were the first, you know, two that were in the station. So I'm not sure if we know that for sure. I don't know. This maybe calls for a little bit more investigation, but that's what Lostpedia is for. All right. So back in the present, Ben takes an outrigger to, he plans to take an outrigger to the main island. Ken wants to go to the main island with him in hopes that Jin is there. And Frank shows up, and Sun tells Frank, I have to trust him. And so they get to the boats, and Ben starts to explain to Frank that he can get supplies for the survivors from New Otherton, or the barracks, I guess, as it's officially called in the show. And Sun knocks Ben out with a paddle and tells Frank, I lied about trusting Ben. So apparently she just wanted to get to where the boats were. And again, I mean, this really brings up the question of, did Frank go back and tell the other, you know, the other survivors that he was leaving, or was Alana spying? That I'm really curious about. Okay, the missing toe, thank you. Kelvin said he was recruited to Dharma after the Gulf War. And in fact, we know that that's true. He wasn't making that up because, of course, we saw him in a Saeed flashback. So that's a good point. So Kelvin joined the Dharma Initiative sometime between 1991 and December of 1992. It was definitely in the early 90s, according to Lostpedia. Thanks, the Missing Toe and Bailey Bear, for looking that up. The Missing Toe says, with regard to Sun knocking out Ben, they know how much viewers enjoy seeing Ben get beat up, so they had to work that in. Again, I suspect that there must have been more to that beating, or he got beaten up by somebody else, because that's really weird that he's just sort of there among the people who got injured on the plane. But anyway, so 30 years earlier, Sawyer rescues Saeed, but has to make Saeed admit to being a hostile, I guess. Sawyer explains that that's one of the parts to the agreement that they have with the hostiles. They have to admit who they really are, and, you know, Saeed plays along and says, well, we don't call ourselves hostiles, but yes, I'm one of them. So he's playing along with Sawyer's plan, even though Sawyer at this point doesn't have much of a plan. His only plan is to try to keep Saeed alive. Back in the present, Frank and Son arrive at the main island, and when they get there, the pier is a mess, and there's just stuff strewn all about. Something large rustles the branches, and, you know, they are like, well, maybe it's just a big animal or something. Of course, everyone's thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, is this a smoke monster? And they make their way to the barracks. The barracks are all run down. You know, it looks all just completely destroyed everywhere. And then they hear the whispers. I haven't seen any postings yet of the whispers. A lot of times people play back the audio, put it in reverse, and I haven't seen any of that so far on Dark UFO or Sludge website. So I don't know if there's anything interesting in the whispers. If anyone knows anything about that, you know, definitely shoot me an email, thelostmeister@gmail.com, and hopefully we can talk about that next week if anyone does analyze the whispers. But let's see, a light comes on in one of the buildings at the barracks, and this building I noticed still has a Dharma logo on it, which is kind of weird because wouldn't you think that when the others lived there, they would have taken off all the Dharma logos from the barracks when they made it their own home? Maybe not. I mean, you know, they didn't go and take the Dharma logos off of the Hydra station, for example. So in any case, there's a big Dharma logo on the door, if I remember right. And someone, we see a silhouette, and my wife and I both at the same time were like, okay, it's Christian Shepherd. Christian Shepherd, indeed, is the one who greets them. And Son, not knowing who he is or that he's dead, asks if he knows where Jin is. And Christian smiles and says, follow me. And that kind of made me a little nervous because the last person that Christian asked to follow him was Claire. And, of course, many fans presume that she's now dead for a number of reasons. She didn't seem at all bothered to have given up Aaron, et cetera. And she doesn't, you know, either she hasn't figured out or she doesn't seem to mind that her dad is dead and yet walking around. I don't know. That whole thing is weird, and Claire is definitely an unresolved question. What happened to Claire? And when we talk about Easter eggs, we'll bring Claire up again, so a little teaser for that. Christian shows Son a photograph. He pulls it off of the wall. He's looking at all of these different Dharma recruitment photographs on the wall, and he finds the one from 1977, and he shows Son a photograph with Jin and her other friends, you know, other Flight 15 survivors, he calls them her friends, who were in the Dharma Initiative in 1977, along with the other new recruits. So that was pretty surprising, I'm sure, to Son. And Christian indicates that it's going to be a little difficult for, you know, I can't remember exactly his wording. I don't think he said it would be difficult, but if they were far away or something like that, referring to the time gap between them. And then and there's a little Easter egg along with that, too, we'll talk about in a moment. 30 years earlier, a little boy, brings Saeed a sandwich. And I immediately figured out, okay, this has got to be young Ben. As we talked about on the podcast last week, Ben would have come to the island either in 1976 or 1977. So that was not a big surprise to see Ben. At least, you know, if you're familiar with the timeline, it wouldn't have been that big of a surprise. Or if you listened to this podcast last week when we talked about that. But so young Ben brings Saeed a sandwich. And he's very, very nice and polite to Saeed. And he says, I didn't put mustard on it. I didn't know if you like mustard and all this stuff. So I don't know whether this was before or after he's already started to make friends with the others, with Richard Alpert, et cetera, but a little bit of a hint of him having a rebellious spirit and sort of, you know, working with the bad guys, or at least having sympathy for them. All right, and then that was pretty much where they left off the episode. So let's go ahead and talk about screenshots and Easter eggs. And in a few minutes, we'll get into the preview for next week. But before we do that, let's talk about screenshots, et cetera, from this episode. So let's see. There were a few other interesting things. We mentioned a couple of those things already on things from Sledgewood's site. One thing that really stood out was they have a video that they linked to that's on YouTube. And a couple of screenshots, too, although the video definitely makes it much more clear. I'll paste a link in the chat. Again, as always, this will be in the show notes. But there's a woman in the room with Christian and Son and Frank. There's somebody in the background. In one particular scene where you see Son, if you watch that short little clip, that little YouTube video, you can definitely see there's a light-haired person in the background, certainly looks like it could be Claire. But, I mean, of course, the face is completely blurry. It's out of focus. So, and the room is dark, et cetera. It's very difficult to tell for sure. And they've lightened the picture, and it looks like they've lightened the video quite a bit to make it more clear. But nevertheless, there is a person in the background in that scene who very well could be Claire. It appears as though the person has blonde hair. So that is a pretty interesting one. So, and hopefully we'll get a little bit more of that story soon. Hopefully maybe next week or something. Let's see. Bailey Bear mentions Rudzinski wanted to kill Saeed because he was a hostile. Wouldn't that break the agreement? You know, that's a good point, I guess. As long as he... Well, based on what Surya was saying, as long as he declared that he was a hostile, then they wouldn't kill him. But if he didn't admit to being a hostile, then they had every right to kill him. So I guess Sawyer kind of was using that part of the agreement to his advantage so that Rudzinski, you know, couldn't be excused for killing him. But up to that point, you know, when Rudzinski said, we kill him, you know, that's the solution. At that point, Saeed hadn't admitted to being a hostile yet. Yeah, Bailey Bear says, I thought Rudzinski said to kill Saeed. Yeah, that's what I was referring to. Rudzinski wanted Sawyer to kill Saeed. Maybe I said that wrong, but yeah, Rudzinski wanted to kill Saeed or to have Sawyer do it. He was basically saying, you know, we need to kill this guy, and then Sawyer basically worked around that by saying, no, we need to talk to him, and then he got coerced, you know, basically Saeed to admit that he was a hostile. Okay, anyway, getting back to the screenshots and the Easter eggs and things, but and feel free, of course, to bring up anything else from the episode, too, before we get into spoilers. It'd be a good time to do that. There's another post that they have with Smokey with Christian, the smoke monster. That's a little bit speculative. I'm not going to read the whole article, but you can check that out. I don't think that that's the case, although I did notice that it was sort of smoky, I guess. I was thinking more like mist, but there was a brief moment. Let's see if they've got a video of this here. There was a brief moment when the door was in the background, and there was definitely like a wisp of smoke that comes into the room. And I don't know, it was white smoke, and so far we've never seen the smoke monster as being white. The only description we've ever gotten of the smoke monster being white was when John Locke referred to, you know, seeing the smoke monster, and it was a peaceful experience, and I don't remember if he specifically used the word white, but in any case, he indicated that what he saw, you know, was beautiful, which sort of sounds like the opposite of the smoke monster as we're used to seeing it. So I don't know. I don't know if it would look like a cloud, if it would look like a beautiful, you know, white cloud in the sky or something like that. I don't know. But in any case, I don't know if I buy it, but it's an interesting theory anyway, that maybe that's some sort of a hint that it is, the smoke monster is Christian or is working with Christian or whatever. I don't buy it, but it's interesting. Here's another one. This one's a lot more interesting to me anyway. They have there were a couple of Dharma recruit photographs in this episode, and if you take a look at the two side by side, I guess one of the shots is actually when they're kind of there for the photo, and not necessarily like the photo maybe wasn't taken that exact second, but if you compare the photo with the shot of all of them standing next to each other, you know, for the photo, there's a person missing in the actual scene where they're showing all the people standing there. And conversely, there's an extra person in the photograph that Christian shows to Sun. And, this is something, I don't know if this is making a mountain out of a molehill, but, you know, they say that this one person doesn't show up in one place but shows up in the other. They say that it sort of looks like there's a foot maybe in the shot, not the photograph, but the shot, you know, the far shot when they're showing other people, all the people kind of standing there posing for the photo. Honestly, I think it could just as easily be that person was standing behind somebody else in the photograph, when that video shot was taken. Or it could be maybe they just made a mistake. I don't know. You hate to think that the Lost writers, the Lost, really, I guess, cast and crew or whatever, could make that kind of a mistake. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, there certainly have been prop mistakes and other things in the show before. So I don't know if there's really much to do with that, but you can definitely check out the screenshots from the episode and compare for yourself. All right. I think that will just about do it for known Easter eggs and interesting screenshots from the episode for now. If anything else comes up, we'll probably talk about it, I'm sure, in the next week's episode. Bailey Bear wonders, why is Christian still in charge, Locke's on the island? Well, Christian sort of works with Jacob, right? So I guess maybe he plays by different rules than Richard Alpert, for example. I mean, Locke is sort of Richard's boss, I guess, whatever, right now. But, Natalie in Seattle says, was Christian ever in charge? I guess what Bailey Bear is getting at there is just that Christian is sort of a representative of Jacob at this point. And Jacob seems to be the boss of the others, at least, you know, Ben and Richard Alpert and Locke all sort of take advice, if you want to call it that, from Jacob. And recently they've been going through Christian to get information from Jacob. And The Missing Tale also points out that Locke hasn't made his way to Jacob or Richard to claim his throne. So that's a good point, too. Any other thoughts before we get into the preview for next week? All right, let's dive into the preview. So these are the things that I noticed from the preview for next week's episode. And again, you know, for those who see the preview as being spoilers, you know, this would be the time to tune out, so thanks for listening. And Saeed looked like he was up against a tree with his arms sort of stretched out like in a T-shaped, T-formation, as though he was kind of like a crucifixion pose, I guess you could say, in a brief shot. That's how it looked to me anyway. I mean, this is all just stuff that I watched as close as I could and wrote everything down right after the preview was over. So hopefully I'm not messing things up from my memory, but I tried to write it down as soon as possible. Saeed said, you're all going to die, you know. And so that sort of sounds like he's telling the Dharma folks that the purge is going to happen. And that might not be the best idea at this point. Oh, Bailey Bear also has a good question. Yeah, where's Faraday in all this? Yeah, Faraday actually was brought up. I think there was one thing that I was going to put in my notes, and I couldn't remember what it was. I started writing it, and I didn't finish. Maybe that's what it was. Where is Daniel Faraday right now? I think it was Sawyer. I don't remember for sure, but somebody mentioned something about Faraday in this episode. And I guess we're sort of left to wonder where he currently is. But we do know from earlier in the season from a flashback to that time period. But Dan Faraday was in the background when Pierre Chang, Dr. Chang, was in the caves. So this is when they were building the Orchid Station, or preparing to build it. And so we know at some point Daniel Faraday gets in with that group that's working near the Orchid. Where he is right at this moment, I don't know. And certainly we haven't seen him yet in this episode. The Missing Toe speculates perhaps Faraday dies creating the opening to the frozen donkey wheel. Okay, getting back to the preview. So Saeed seems to be telling the Dharma folks about the Purge, which of course is messing around with the past, and you're not supposed to do that when you're time traveling, according to Dan Faraday, according to what he's told us before. Of course, he has changed the past because he went back and told Desmond, you know, get my mom to help save us or something. And then, of course, Desmond remembered that later, which doesn't make sense. But, you know, anyway, time travel stuff. And Juliet, another thing from the preview, Juliet says to Kate, stay away. And presumably she's saying, stay away from my man, Sawyer. He's with me now. And Jack was looking at one of the barracks, which is on fire. He's standing outside, I think. And it looks like at least one of the buildings at the barracks was on fire. So it looks like there's a lot of conflict in this episode coming up. Sawyer tells Saeed that he's on his own, and it looks like he headbutted him. And my wife said that she thought she saw that too, which that's weird. But I guess Sawyer headbutts Saeed after, you know, telling him that he's on his own, he's going to have to fend for himself. How he escapes, or whether, you know, he was let out by somebody, I don't know. My wife thought maybe Ben let Saeed out because he's somebody who kind of seems to be sympathetic to the others, or at least in, you know, at some point around that time period, he sort of became sympathetic to the others. Could have been Ben that let him out, but maybe it was Sawyer who was letting him out because they were being attacked, you know, or something like that, with the whole, you know, barracks being on fire and all that kind of thing going on. Maybe that was at the point where Sawyer said, let Saeed out. Or maybe Saeed is the one who set the fire, for all we know. But Saeed says something interesting. He says, now I know exactly why I'm here. And right after that, they show him, of course, from a different scene from where he says that, they show him firing a handgun. And so here's my speculation on what's going on. Of course, the big question is, who was he shooting at? My theory is, you know, based on what he said, now I know exactly why I'm here. I think he was shooting at young Ben. I think he was trying to kill Ben so that Ben would not have existed in the future. So this is getting into what I said I would talk about with the whole paradox thing. Here's where that would be impossible. Okay. Well, just to name one instance where Ben would have had to be alive in order for Saeed to be there in the past where he is right now to kill Ben in 1977, Ben would have had to be alive or else Saeed never would have come back to the island in the first place. Ben was the one who sort of went around and did Locke's job, or finished Locke's job, with recruiting people and bringing them back to the island. So that's just one instance where Ben had to have been alive for all those events to play out the way that they did. And I'm sure you can, you know, if you go back through the other episodes, you can think of at least a dozen other reasons why if Ben had never existed, the things wouldn't have worked out the way that they did, and it wouldn't make any sense for Saeed to have been where he was. This is a paradox thing. So it's difficult to even explain all the ways that it could be wrong, because it couldn't have existed that way if Saeed had killed Ben in the past. Right. Bailey Bear says, Saeed says something like he knows why he's back on the island. Yeah, but I believe the quote was, now I know exactly why I'm here. That's what I wrote down in my notes, and I think that's how he said it. So that's my theory. I think Saeed is going to go after young Ben. The Missing Toe says then the island won't let Ben die. I think just the nature of the show won't let Ben in the past die. It just would not make sense. There would be way too big of a paradox. The writers would have no way that they could possibly explain that would make any sense at all if Ben was to die. If he died in the past, other events never would have happened the way that they did, and they wouldn't have come back to the island at all, not to mention a number of other things would never have happened. So there's no way they could possibly have young Ben die. So something has got to happen where he doesn't die. Maybe he gets injured, but I think just the time-space continuum, you know, or as sort of Ms. Hawking puts it, the universe course corrects. You can't change things. When you go back and, you know, when you time travel, you can't change the outcome of what ultimately happens. Like with, getting back to the whole plot with Charlie and how Desmond kept saving his life. And it was impossible for Desmond ultimately to save Charlie's life. And it's strange enough that, I don't know, the universe allowed him to save Charlie's life in any of those circumstances. But just the fact was that the universe, I guess, in the Lost world, the universe course corrects. And so if you save somebody at one point that was supposed to die, they were destined to die in a certain point in time, they're going to die eventually anyway, and you ultimately can't stop that from happening. The universe is going to course correct. Well, I think that's kind of is similar to what's going on here. Like, if someone was to try to kill Ben has to be in place for other events to take place. Otherwise, I think this is where this sort of gets into alternate realities or alternate dimensions, if you want to call it that, alternate timelines of reality. There's some theory kind of that goes along with the whole time travel theory that there can be alternate timelines. So where in one timeline something happens one way, in another timeline it happens another way. I don't think they're going to get that complicated on Lost because it's difficult enough for, you know, anybody to understand that kind of stuff. Not to mention that even people who are, you know, so-called experts on time travel theory, you know, would get in debates about these very things. So I really don't think they're going to get that in detail. I don't think that young Ben is going to die. That just wouldn't make any sense. Let's see. Missing Toast says, maybe Ben's miracle healing, because he can't die, they take that a mistaken sign that he is special, like Locke, and is supposed to be the leader. Okay, that's interesting. I kind of like that theory. Maybe so the others sort of find out about how Ben should have died but didn't, and so they take that to mean that he's special. I like that. Missing Tale continues, and an attempt on Ben's life turns him forever into an untrusting, paranoid, devious person. The Missing Toe also points out Jack could still die. Again, for Jack, like, he has already, in the past for him, he's already performed that surgery on Ben. So Ben, Kate, Hurley, Sawyer, Miles, Dan Faraday, Juliet, Saeed, any of those people are certainly subject to die, even though they're in the past right now, because they've already lived all the other experiences. There wouldn't be any paradox with them dying in the past. They still would be born and all that kind of stuff. It's just that, you know, they would be dead. It would be just like if they were living in 2007 still and they died, they would just be dead. And that would be that. So there's no paradox with that. Certainly any of those people could die, even though they're currently, you know, stuck in 1977. And that wouldn't be paradoxical. At least not that I'm aware, based on my understanding of time travel theory. If anyone wants to correct me on that, thelostmeister@gmail.com. Certainly send me your thoughts on that. And MP3 comments, too, if you want. I haven't played MP3 caller comments before, but I'd be willing to do that, too, if anyone's got any good theories on that. Okay, let me see if there's anything else in my notes here from the preview. So Jack was looking at one of the barracks that's on fire. Sawyer tells Saeed he's on his own and headbutts him. Saeed says, now I know exactly why I'm here. He fires a handgun, and my speculation is he's shooting at Ben. And we already talked about, would that even be possible for him to kill Ben? Saeed obviously doesn't have a very good understanding of of time travel and all that kind of stuff. But I think I think as far as the show is concerned, I don't think they're going to let young Ben die because it caused too many problems. How did Saeed get out? My wife speculated, I'd mentioned maybe young Ben let him out. And we talked about maybe Sawyer could let him out too. At least there wasn't an official Lost podcast this week, at least not on the regular audio feed, although occasionally they post them elsewhere online, kind of like as a video or something else like that. But as far as I know, there was not an official Lost podcast this past week, so we have nothing spoilery or otherwise from that. But again, just a reminder that this was episode 9, so in 2 weeks, episode 11 is coming around, which is called What Happens Happens, and it will be revealed what happened to Aaron at that point. And they're, of course, talking about the context, I guess, of Kate, when Aaron was taken away from Kate, and Kate ended up deciding to go back to the island after all. And hopefully, within the next couple episodes, not a spoiler, but, you know, I hope that they're going to explain the Claire story, too. What's going on with Claire? Is she dead? What's the deal? Let's see. As far as the title for next week's episode, Spoilerfix says that the episode title is He's Our You, which is weird. I don't have any idea what that means. He's Our You, Y-O-U. And they say that it's going to be a Saeed-centric episode. I won't say any more, but Spoilerfix definitely does have other things, including actors, you know, or new characters, I guess, that are going to be shown on the episode and things like that. I'm not even going to read that because I try to stay mostly spoiler-free with the exception of little minor things that don't really, for me anyway, spoil the plot. So if you want to check that out, you check out spoilerfix.com, and they've got a Lost section, spoilerfix.com/lost.php. All right, and I think that will pretty much do it for this week's episode. So thank you to all of those of you who came and listened during the show. We ended up actually having quite a few guests, even though I started late. Several people joined in, at least for a little while. So thank you to everybody who came to listen live. If you have not listened live to the podcast before, you're more than welcome to come and check it out. It's a lot of fun talking to other people in the chat during the recording of the show. And we record Wednesday night right after Lost airs in the Pacific time zone, right after the show is over. So definitely come check that out. And, of course, I don't have any problem with you subscribing to the MP3 feed, too. If you don't mind coming, if you don't want to come to the live show, it's too late for you. I totally understand. And I'm more than happy to have you download the MP3 of the episode, too. I'm grateful to all the subscribers I've got. A lot of great Lost fans. So without any further ado, I'm going to end the recording now. So until next week, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.